Late night funnies and politics. Welcome to Pop Life.
On-demand audio from WAER is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. To give or to find more information, visit our website, waer.org.
Politicians and newsmakers have long been fodder for late-night TV shows, but it seems only recently that politics and political figures are front and center on a nightly basis, and everyone wants in on the act. From network dailies to cable TV weeklies, late-night comedy shows are intentionally or unintentionally attempting to shape public opinion on politics. I'm Joe Lee with pop culture ambassador Bob Thompson, director of the Bleier Center for TV and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. And today we get our chuckle on with late night TV.
Here's Johnny.
In fact, 9 out of 10 people surveyed thought Syria is the female voice in their iPhone. They didn't realize.
This was nice. After their meeting, the Pope gave Trump a medal featuring an olive branch. Yeah, when Trump received it, he said, "Does this mean I can eat for free at any Olive Garden? Or is this just here in Italy?" Or?
Only 1 in 4 Americans believe President Trump has actually drained the swamp. 3 out of 4 Americans believe Trump has peed in the pool. So it works out.
The only FBI drama most Americans expected to unfold on TV were the upcoming seasons of Twin Peaks and The X-Files.
I mean, you know Barkley's mad when he's willing to sacrifice a chicken wing. You know what I'm saying?
Johnny Carson once said democracy means that anyone can grow up to be president, and anyone who doesn't grow up can be vice president. He often skewered politicians, presidents in particular.
They asked the president what he's going to do. He said he's going to write his new office building in Century City, and he's going to write his memoirs. Now, that's fascinating. For the last 2 years, he's telling us he can't remember a thing. It's funny how a big cash advance from Random House can jog a politician's memory.
Well, yes, I do remember that now, yes.
So, Bob, did Carson lead the way on political comedy, or is there a history of that before the Carson show?
Well, Johnny Carson told jokes about politics. I don't think I would ever call him a political satirist or humorist. I watched in my lifetime thousands of hours of Johnny Carson, and I can't point to any time I ever got a political insight from him. Now, that isn't to say that he didn't do a lot of jokes about politics. He did, especially in his monologue. He'd do headlines. But the United States certainly had political humorists writing in print and cartoonists and all the rest of it. Television was really not a very big place for that kind of stuff to happen. I mean, Johnny Carson would have been maybe one of the only people, Parr and a few others, doing it. Primetime tended to ignore politics entirely for flying nuns and talking horses. And even Saturday Night Live, which starts in the mid-1970s, we think of that as the big explosion of this. But let's think back to those first seasons. Chevy Chase comments upon the Ford administration by falling over chairs and knocking down podia. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was funny, no question about it. But except in the Weekend Update things, and even in those, there was not a lot of sophisticated political humor. Mm-hmm. I think it, and the other talk show people, Letterman was very apolitical for a good chunk of his career. He was doing brilliant comedy, but it was other weird sorts of stuff. I think it really wasn't until we got to the turn of the century with what Comedy Central was doing that we start seeing this explosion of much more sophisticated, well-researched, complex political humor that is of a totally different species than what Carson was doing.
So the public has a definite appetite for this. We've seen this year where Stephen Colbert's The Late Show overtakes Jimmy Fallon's The Tonight Show in ratings after Fallon's sort of innocuous treatment of Donald Trump during his appearance as a candidate on the show. And so that sort of speaks to the fact that Fallon didn't do something that the public wanted in terms of how to engage this polarizing political figure, but Colbert did, and the payoff is in the ratings.
Fallon, of course, has been working in the Leno tradition, and Leno was working in the Carson tradition. And generally, that was the best way to get the most viewers. But we have gotten into such an unusual sort of political environment, that's one thing, that Colbert had the credentials to move into because he'd been doing the Colbert Report over in on Comedy Central, which we might want to get to. And he just made sure that he started changing his show to more reflect that kind of political sensibility. And you're right, he started inching up to and then past Fallon. I think that is people are much more have much more of an appetite for that now. And part of that appetite has been given to them by these other shows outside of the usual late night programs with the band and the guests and all that kind of stuff. And I think first, of course, was The Daily Show. Mm-hmm. Now, The Daily Show starts with Craig Kilborn, and it is the parody of a news show. It does a lot of the stuff that the other one would. But when Jon Stewart takes over in the very late 90s, he's doing pretty much the way it used to be. But then we got to the 2000 election. That show became its own self at that point. And then we started seeing comedy of a very different kind. Yes, we'd had the Smothers Brothers and Laugh-In and Carson and all the rest of it. But The Daily Show not only made fun of political leaders, it made fun of the mostly TV press that covered them. Mm-hmm. Then Colbert then comes out of that show and does his parody of The O'Reilly Factor. And that 1-2 punch of those two things totally changed the way comedy delivered politics. Even the people like Letterman and all those others, they had to somehow respond to that because it seemed so relevant, mm-hmm. and suddenly it made what the other ones were doing seem kind of silly. I think that's what's happening with Fallon right now, is his mussing Donald Trump's hair when Trump comes on the air somehow seems so old school compared to the kinds of stuff that's going on in these other shows, including Colbert.
So you mentioned Saturday Night Live, and of course they're more of a sketch comedy show, but they are so successful with their political comedy that viewers eagerly anticipate how the week's political news is going to play out on the show.
Glenn, do I come to your job and slap the 7 or 8 hot dogs out of your mouth? You're really going to ask me that? This is offensive. If he's crazy, he's crazy like a fox with mental problems. Okay, next question.
Saturday Night Live, especially this season, has become they're doing countdowns, and what happens on Saturday Night Live is covered across the board. I was watching Sunday morning 3 screens of television, and there was a moment when all 3 of the 24-hour cable channels were talking about what Saturday Night Live had done the night before. And they really now are going into all this stuff in great detail. How much impact this actually has, and there's a difference between Melissa McCarthy doing Sean Spicer absolutely hilariously, and Baldwin doing Trump absolutely hilariously, and what's going on some of these analysis shows. So, I mean, I guess the biggest impact, I can never watch a Sean Spicer press conference without seeing Melissa McCarthy. And I suppose in some ways that undermines the credibility or undermines the ability for him to get his message across if half the audience just can't help but seeing Saturday Night Live. And Saturday Night Live has done that before. I think probably the biggest impact they ever had on how people thought about a candidate was Tina Fey's mm-hmm. treatment of Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin had done very poorly on those Katie Couric interviews. I think anybody would agree with that. But they were on CBS Evening News. It was the 3rd-rated evening news things. Once upon a time, that would have happened and it would have gone away. Palin, of course, gets imitated by Tina Fey about those interviews.
Brilliantly.
It was brilliantly and sometimes verbatim. It was the age of YouTube, so everybody could then go online and see what the originals looked like and then could compare them. So what happened was, those funny impersonations brought millions of people to see the originals. And when the originals are bad for you, that really, in many ways, undermined that candidacy. Did it change the election? No. Barack Obama would have won that election, Saturday Night Live or no Saturday Night Live. But I think it changed the way an awful lot of people perceived her.
I do have to wonder if they are doing themselves a misservice. As a consumer, when I'm looking for the political comedy on Saturday Night Live, when they do the regular skits, I'm bored. So it's like I'm going there for the political comedy, and then when they get to doing something else, it's just doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah, well, if Lorne Michaels is listening, I think that's a really, really good point, because There's a couple of things Saturday Night Live has done this year that is kind of mystifying, although maybe necessary. First of all, they're now highest rating in almost a quarter of a century. They found themselves in the center of the vortex of the civic conversation. All great news. And I think you're right. If I were running that place, I think I may just say, let's, for a while, we'll go back to it at some point, but let's go all civic stuff all the time. Because you're right, a couple of weeks ago, Louis C.K., you know, you've got these great sketches of Alec Baldwin being both Bill O'Reilly and Donald Trump. It seems like it's so on top of things. And then Louis C.K. comes on a sketch about a lawyer with charmingly long eyelashes. Mm-hmm. It was funny enough, but it made no sense. That might be one of the things they want to do. The other thing they've done in this season is they're going on these long breaks. In March, in April, mm-hmm. there were these big three-week reruns. And as we know with the news cycle now, in 3 weeks, an awful lot of stuff happens. Now, part of that, they may just not be able to keep up with all these things. I agree. The stuff that's not political in Saturday Night Live now seems oddly out of place.
Yeah. There are shows that devote most, if not all, of their content to politics and political news, shows like The Daily Show, which we mentioned, Real Time with Bill Maher, and Full Frontal with Samantha Bee.
The year was 2010. Kesha's brave cry for help was at the top of the dance charts. The man-made disaster spewing toxic foulness wasn't Donald Trump, but Deepwater Horizon, and oh yeah, there was an election. Just one of those boring midterm ones that Will.i.am does not make videos about. And just like with our college midterms, most of America figured it was fine to sleep through this one.
There's a proliferation of content, and it's hard to keep up with, and who's doing it well?
Well, there is now, and Daily Show starts this. And if you look at The Daily Show, most of the people that are doing it all across the board now come from The Daily Show.
Yeah.
I mean, that became the college of this sort of thing. But we're now getting some of these programs that are really becoming almost like political science lectures. And I would say Samantha Bee is a good example of that. Those are little essays, mm-hmm. visual essays that she does.
It's almost like a TED Talk.
It is like a TED Talk. You're absolutely right. And no PowerPoints here. This is effectively rhetorically sound stuff. And, of course, she's got the fire and brimstone in a lot of the stories that she does as well. And, again, going back to The Daily Show, I think what they're doing really well is they've tried to turn these things into intellectual, rational arguments. You say some claim that some political leader has made, and you show the clip of them making it. What so infuriates some of them is that that used to be enough. You'd show somebody saying something, you'd show them contradicting themselves, and you'd have won the argument. It's interesting to see these comedians, how flustered they get that some people don't consider that having won the argument anymore. And then they, of course, make that part of their deal as well. I think Trevor Noah has made The Daily Show a very different thing than it was with Jon Stewart. People aren't talking about it as much. They're not watching it as much. But he's doing some really interesting things there in this regard. He does it from behind the desk as opposed to standing up. But he's doing some great stuff there. Larry Wilmore, who used to follow him after he took over from Colbert, I think had his own voice and was doing a lot of this. He covered some things in this lecture TED Talk format on police shootings, on the Confederate flag issue, that was some of the most enlightening, conscious-raising stuff that I had seen on that subject in any medium. And then, of course, Samantha Bee, who is got the luxury of being only a weekly show with relatively short seasons. Those things really are little essays that she does and are very convincing and intellectually sound.
Now, the one person that's taking this to a whole new level is HBO's John Oliver show.
Yeah.
It's called Last Week Tonight.
Yes, Opiaphobia, which is not to be confused with Oprah-phobia, which is the irrational fear of screaming talk show hosts giving you a brand new Pontiac sedan. Oprah, I can't afford the taxes on this. You haven't thought it through.
Now, he's caused websites to crash. He's moved legislators to push for new laws and inspired ordinary citizens into action. There is something of a Oprah effect now with John Oliver. He has a John Oliver effect. I mean, he can move the needle, it seems like.
He does. I think John Oliver's numbers when he's got new episodes on the air are higher than Fallon's and Colbert's. So that means they're the highest in late night, I believe. And yes, this is much more of a, I would call this getting very close to advocacy journalism. Now, I know Oliver is not a journalist, so let's call him, instead of an investigative journalist, let's call him an investigative comedian. Mm-hmm. He does in a comic mode the kind of stuff that Murrow used to do in a journalistic mode. Now, we have to make a distinction between the difference because you can say things that are true in comedy. He does it all the time with exaggerations and all the rest. We are supposed to know that, but he does it. But he will take on a subject and has the luxury to sometimes take the whole episode, 22 minutes on one thing. A lot of people are watching. It has an existence then, of course, after it plays on HBO. And it's resulted in actual political action. My favorite example of this is the net neutrality. Mm-hmm. Net neutrality is a really complicated subject, and we all kind of sort of know what it means, but it's complicated. John Oliver's show one night took on net neutrality. That was the best review of what it meant. It was the best, I think, argument of how it should be handled. I've read a lot about net neutrality. I've heard a lot of analysis. If someone were to say, can I have the quick summary of net neutrality, I wouldn't point them to a print newspaper. I'd point them to that John Oliver episode.
It's like Vice meets The Daily Show.
Yeah, right.
It really is.
That's
it's an in-depth examination and investigation of a wide-ranging topics and societal issues. It's a great show. I can't get enough of it. John Oliver is doing a fantastic job. This British comedian's impact is no joke at all.
I wish he could be on more. I mean, when he came back after the election, I don't think he'd been on since like the Truman administration. He was gone for a lot of really important stuff. But I think that's one of the reasons his stuff is so good, is that material doesn't write itself.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got the luxury to take some time to do it.
This is Pop Life. When we return, it's your weekly invitation to binge. There's one show that constantly comes up when people are telling me about a show that they are just getting around to discovering.
Who are you talking to right now? Who is it you think you see? Do you know how much I make a year? I mean, even if I told you, you wouldn't believe it. Do you know what would happen if I suddenly decided to stop going into work? A business big enough that it could be listed on the NASDAQ goes belly up. Disappears. It ceases to exist without me. No, you clearly don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Classic TV scene.
Oh,
classic
my gosh.
TV scene. This show, talking Breaking Bad, one of the more intense shows that I've ever seen.
And, you know, if you're making these lists of the greatest shows of all time, if this isn't on the top of it, it's awfully close to it. Just listening to a monologue like that, and there were a lot of them, it is so just beautifully written and acted. And the very premise, you know, one of the other great shows, The Sopranos, is all about, when all is said and done, a very bad man given an opportunity, an invitation to redemption, and he refuses it. Breaking Bad is about a very good man given an opportunity of damnation, and he takes it. First episode, he grabs it. And there is so the imagery, the care taken, the falling pants in that first scene or close to it that get repeated everywhere. I mean, we could talk about a single scene of Breaking Bad for 3 hours and not get to the bottom of what makes that show so breathtakingly beautiful.
If you're not familiar, it's a mild-mannered high school chemistry teacher diagnosed with terminal cancer, becomes the biggest manufacturer of meth in New Mexico. Sounds like a winning concept. It is The show is odd in its premise alone, but it does show the rise of the anti-hero as a subject matter. I personally love anti-heroes.
Well, you get plenty of them now. I mean, most of the great... It's far hard to find a hero that isn't an anti-hero now. I mean, Tony Soprano, Don Draper, mm-hmm. Walter White. And Walter White, even his name, is reminiscent of Walt Whitman, of course, mm-hmm. a great American poet. And that's deliberate. There's a Walt Whitman book that plays a very major role in Breaking Bad at some point. And the very fact that he's a chemistry teacher, they play this all the way through. Mm-hmm. We hear him giving lecture about how chemistry is all about change. It's all about, and that's exactly what we then see happen. And right up to the final scene, that image of the periodic table plays a really crucial role. I get goosebumps thinking about Breaking Bad, mm-hmm. much less watching it.
It's six seasons, 2008 to 2013, stars Bryan Cranston, created by Vince Gilligan, intense and funny all at the same time. But there are some really shocking moments, and I don't want to do any spoilers during our discussion, but there's some really shocking moments during this show that are, you know, very unexpected, and it leaves you talking with whoever you're watching it with pretty much for an hour or two after. And your pick of the week.
Well, you've gone to Breaking Bad for an invitation to binge. I guarantee anybody who watches it is going to finish that sixth season and really wish that there was still more. So I guess I'll give my invitation to binge to its spinoff, its prequel, Better Call Saul. Very different kind of show, but brilliant in its own way. It takes place 6 years before Breaking Bad. The major character is Saul Goodman, who'd been Walter White's attorney, but he's not called Saul Goodman. He's somebody else entirely at this point, Jimmy McGill. And it is another, it's been two seasons, it's now in its third season. Very quirky, very unusual, a much different pacing than
Breaking
Bad.
It is not Breaking Bad.
It's not Breaking Bad.
You'll be disappointed if you go to watch it and expect the Breaking Bad formula. It's more dramatic.
But if you can get through the first three episodes and the realization that this is not Breaking Bad 2, and if you get through the second season, there are some critics who have gone so far as to utter the blasphemy that Better Call Saul might end up being even better than Breaking Bad. I'm not willing to go that far.
It's a slow pace to get there, for sure.
But there's some interesting stuff in that as well.
Yeah, no, it's a great series, and there are appearances of Breaking Bad alum, because obviously it's a prequel, so you get to see some of the criminals and some of the characters that were in Breaking Bad in their earlier days on this program.
And they surprise you in delightful ways when because you remember them, and you'd forgotten that, oh yes, this is the same Breaking Bad universe. You'll never eat at a cinema in the same after you've watched this show.
Thanks for listening to Pop Life, a production of WAER Syracuse Public Media, produced by Kevin Kloss. If there's a show you want us to know about, leave a comment on the Pop Life Facebook page. Want more Pop Life? Listen on demand at WAER.org.